A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been in Venice with his wife, Hannah, who's an architect, on what he describes as a sort of pilgrimage, tongue in cheek. And after days of beautiful sights and Instagram influencers queuing up to photograph them, he woke up one morning with an unshakable desire to do the exact opposite of finding the savvy insider pics. He wanted the worst, the lowest rated lunch spot in Venice. So he traipsed out to a one-star restaurant that had been called a tourist trap, a shakedown, possibly the worst service ever, and arrived to find it had closed down. Permanently. The inevitable endpoint for terrible businesses. Here's what he wrote us. I'm going to read it in full, because the asides matter. He says, I think I told a story in this podcast once about how when I was in Venice, I woke up with an unshakable desire to seek out the very worst, lowest-rated restaurants in the city. My wife, an architect, was there on a sort of pilgrimage. I should clarify. I mean this tongue-in-cheek. And after seeing all the beautiful sights and the Instagram influencers queuing up to photograph them, I thought one morning, let's do the exact opposite of trying to find the savvy insider pics. Let's see if we can actually filter on the lowest-rated restaurants and hotels in Venice, and go to one for lunch. He adds, I should mention that my wife and I aren't in the habit of wasting money. We haven't taken a vacation, save for visiting in-laws, in a number of years, actually. Then he describes arriving at the one-star lunch place, finding it permanently closed, and the devastation. And here's the core of it. He says experiencing the worst that a city has to offer isn't the easy enterprise you might think. It's actually hard to filter map data by lowest rating. You can't exactly tell the owner, well, you saw that this was the worst rated bar in town, and you're here to see how bad it is. So the playbook to do this well calls for a certain blend of desk research, asking locals in a way that doesn't end in a violent altercation, and then inconspicuously seeing how bad this place truly is. For those determined to chart the one-star review circuit in a city, whether for a day or an afternoon, and do it well, what's the master playbook?
So today we're building that playbook, the one-star review circuit done properly.
And I love that Daniel clarifies he's not in the habit of wasting money. That's the detail that tells you this isn't masochism. It's a specific information retrieval problem with real technical and social dimensions.
Right. The core tension is that the worst-rated category is genuinely hard to surface because every platform is optimized to show you the best. Google Maps, Yelp, TripAdvisor, they're all designed around one question: what's good near me? They aren't designed for what's the most memorably terrible experience I can have before 2 in the afternoon.
The platforms are actively hostile to this query.
Actively hostile. And that's what makes it interesting. This is a data problem, a social problem, and a perception problem all at once. So let's break it into 3 parts. The technical workaround for actually finding these places, the social engineering for asking locals without getting punched, and the observational fieldwork once you're inside.
The first problem is purely technical. The platforms don't want you to find the worst. Here's how you beat them.
Google Maps is the most stubborn. You can search for restaurants, you can filter by rating, but the lowest option in the standard UI is usually 3 stars or 3.5. There's no 1-star toggle. And even when you sort by rating, it defaults to highest first. There's no reverse sort button. You can't just click a little arrow and flip it.
Which is a design choice. They're not hiding a button by accident.
No, it's intentional. Maps is a recommendation engine. It wants to surface places you'll actually go to and enjoy, because that keeps you using maps. A 1-star discovery tool doesn't serve that goal, so the native app gives you nothing.
So the first workaround is a dedicated tool called WorstEats.com.
WorstEats. It's brilliant in its single-mindedness. It scrapes review data from multiple platforms and specifically surfaces the lowest-rated restaurants in any city you search. It does what the native apps refuse to do. You type in a city, it gives you the bottom of the barrel, ranked.
And it exists because someone else had Daniel's exact frustration and built the solution.
That's the thing. The tool exists because the problem is real, but Worst Eats is just one approach. There's a method I found documented in a Medium article that's specifically for TripAdvisor, and it's clever because it exploits a sequence the platform didn't think to block. You set the rating slider to 1 star, then you sort by lowest rated rather than lowest price. That specific sequence, slider first, then sort, forces TripAdvisor to reveal what its default sort buries.
Wait, what's the default sort doing that hides them?
TripAdvisor's default is a relevance algorithm. It weights recency, review count, and overall rating into a composite score. A place with 200 one-star reviews and nothing else might still rank above a place with 3 1-star reviews because the algorithm interprets volume as relevance. It thinks, well, lots of people are talking about this place, so it must be relevant to your search. The slider trick bypasses that weighting entirely.
So volume masks the signal. A place can be spectacularly bad, but popular enough with rubbernecking tourists that the algorithm promotes it.
And that's the Yelp problem, too. Yelp technically has a sort by rating feature, but it's inconsistent across platforms. The mobile app buries it differently than the desktop site, and it often defaults back to Yelp's recommended sort after a single search. Plus, there's the filtering algorithm.
The not recommended reviews.
Yelp actively suppresses some 1-star reviews. It deems not recommended. Their algorithm flags reviews from new accounts, reviews that look like they might be competitors, reviews that are too short or too emotional. So the 1-star count you see on a Yelp page isn't the actual 1-star count. Some percentage of the worst reviews are hidden behind a little link at the bottom of the page that most users never click.
So your candidate list from Yelp alone is incomplete by design. You're not seeing the full picture of the misery.
Right. Which means any playbook that relies on one platform is going to miss places. You need to cross-reference.
There was a journalist who tested this systematically. Yahoo, I think. Visited the 6 worst-rated Yelp restaurants in a city and documented the whole thing.
Yes. And the finding that stuck with me is that the worst list is unstable. Places close, get delisted, or get flooded with new reviews that bump them off the bottom. She set out to visit 6 and found that by the time she arrived, the list had already shifted. One place had closed permanently, another had been bought and rebranded, and a third had a sudden influx of 4-star reviews from what looked like a friends and family campaign.
Which is exactly what happened to Daniel in Venice. Showed up, and the place was dead.
The inevitable endpoint. The worst-rated places are often already circling the drain. So the playbook has to account for a high closure rate. I'd say 30 to 50% of your initial list will be gone by the time you get there.
That's not a bug in the method. It's a feature of the category. Being the worst rated means you're probably failing as a business.
So step one of the technical workaround is build a candidate list using Worst Eats or the TripAdvisor slider trick, then verify each candidate across at least 2 platforms. Check Google Maps for the dreaded permanently closed tag, check Yelp for recent reviews that might indicate ownership changes, and check the actual address on Street View to see if the signage is still up.
And pre-select backups. 3 to 5 candidates minimum, expecting 1 or 2 to be dead.
The dead list backup strategy. You don't want to be standing on a Venice street corner with no lunch plan and a disappointed architect wife.
No, you do not. So you've got your list. Now the hard part. Walking in the door without getting thrown out.
The social engineering problem. You can't walk into a bar, announce you're here because it's the worst rated in town, and expect anything but hostility. Even if the owner knows the reviews are bad, being reminded of it by a stranger who traveled there specifically to witness the failure is, that's a fight starter.
The insult is in the framing, so you reframe.
The technique is to ask about places the tourists haven't ruined yet, or the old-school spots that haven't changed in 20 years, or where do you go when you don't want to see a single person taking a photo of their food?
Those questions get you directed to the same places without the insult.
Because you're not asking for the worst. You're asking for the authentic, the unchanged, the local. And in many cases, the worst-rated places are exactly that. They're not optimized for tourists. They haven't updated their decor since 1980. The menu is in one language, and the owner is gruff. Those qualities generate 1-star reviews from tourists who expected something else, but they're exactly what the framing question is designed to surface.
The Venn diagram of worst rated and most authentic has real overlap.
Significant overlap. A place with a 2.3 rating on TripAdvisor might be the best meal you have all trip if what you value is seeing how people actually eat, not how the algorithm wants you to eat.
And the locals know this. They're not eating at the 4.8 places with the neon signs and the picture menus.
They're eating at the place with the handwritten daily specials and the owner who's been there 40 years and doesn't care if you like the decor. So when you ask about the unruined spots, you're not tricking anyone. You're asking a genuine question that locals are often eager to answer because they're tired of their favorite places being overrun.
So the framing does double duty. It protects you from the altercation, and it filters for a specific kind of bad. Not scam bad, not health code violation bad, but authentically indifferent to tourist expectations bad.
Which brings us to the ethics layer. There's a difference between bad that's a shakedown and bad that's just outdated or quirky. The shakedown places, the ones with the one-star reviews that say they charged me 40 euros for a glass of tap water, or they added items to my bill. I didn't order. Those aren't fun. Those are criminal. The master playbook has to distinguish between entertaining bad and dangerous bad.
Who do you make that call before you walk in?
You read the reviews, not the star rating. The star rating tells you something's wrong. The text tells you what kind of wrong. If the complaints are about slow service, rude staff, weird decor, strange menu items, that's entertaining bad. If the complaints are about food poisoning, hidden charges, or aggressive behavior, that's dangerous bad. Cross those off the list.
The hygiene complaints are the red line.
A one-star review that says the bathroom looked like a crime scene isn't an invitation. That's a warning. The playbook is for finding memorably mediocre experiences, not for getting sick in a foreign country.
So you've filtered your list. You've asked the locals with the unruined framing. You've eliminated the health code violations. Now you're inside. What are you actually doing there?
The observational fieldwork. First rule. Order the house specialty.
Why the house specialty?
Because, if a place is bad, the house specialty is usually the worst thing on the menu. It's the dish they've been making for years, often on autopilot, often with shortcuts that have accumulated over time. It's the dish that most reveals the kitchen's true level of care. If the lasagna has been sitting under a heat lamp since 11 in the morning, you want to know that. You don't want the one thing on the menu that happens to be fresh because someone ordered it 5 minutes ago.
So, the house specialty is the diagnostic probe.
It's the control variable. You're not there to give the place a fair shot. You're there to experience it at its most representative. Second, time the service. Not with a stopwatch. Just note when you sat down and when the food arrives. The gap between those two things is often the subject of the one-star reviews, and you want to see if the complaints match reality.
And watch how the staff treat regulars versus tourists.
That's the most revealing observation. A place that's hostile to tourists but warm to regulars is a completely different category from a place that's hostile to everyone. The first is a local institution with a marketing problem. The second is just a bad restaurant.
The first is Daniel's Venice Place. If it hadn't closed, tourists called it a shakedown, but the locals probably loved it.
And that's the kind of bad you're actually looking for. The kind where you walk out and think, I get why tourists hate this, but I also get why it's been here for 30 years.
While you're eating, you're also doing reverse fieldwork, checking whether the one-star reviews match reality.
The data gathering layer. You pull up the reviews on your phone and you cross-reference. Did the reviewer complain about the pasta being overcooked? Is it overcooked? Did they say the waiter ignored them? Are you being ignored? This is the most satisfying part, because you get to see whether the internet was right or whether the reviewers were just impossible to please.
I imagine about half the time the reviews are wildly exaggerated, and the place is just fine. Not good, not terrible, just indifferent.
And that's its own kind of discovery. The gap between the review fury and the actual experience tells you something about who's writing reviews and why. A lot of one-star reviews aren't about the food. They're about a mismatch between expectation and reality. Someone read a guidebook that said charming local trattoria showed up to find a fluorescent-lit room with plastic chairs and lost their mind. The food might have been perfectly adequate.
The crime wasn't the cooking. The crime was the fluorescent lighting.
The fluorescent lighting and the failure to match the fantasy. That's most one-star reviews in tourist cities.
So the playbook so far. Build a candidate list using Worst Eats or the TripAdvisor slider trick. Expect 30 to 50% closure rates and pre-select backups. Ask locals with the unruined framing. Eliminate the dangerous bad by reading the review text, not just the stars. Order the house specialty. Time the service. Cross-reference the live experience against the reviews.
Let's add one more. Not for social media, not to shame the place, but because the instability of the worst list means your experience is rare. The place you ate at might be closed next month. Your notes become the only record of a specific moment in that restaurant's decline.
A field journal of failure.
A naturalist notebook for the urban ecosystem. The worst-rated places are a more honest reflection of a city than the best-rated ones. They haven't been optimized for Instagram. They reveal what the locals actually tolerate.
That's the deeper insight. The best-rated places tell you what tourists want. The worst-rated places tell you what a city actually is.
A city's tolerance for mediocrity is a cultural fingerprint. In some places, a restaurant with slow service and surly staff will be run out of business in 6 months. In others, it'll be there for 40 years because the regulars don't care about service speed and they've known the owner since childhood. The one-star reviews are written by people who don't understand the social contract of that specific place.
The playbook is a way to read that social contract from the outside.
Without getting punched.
Without getting punched is the key performance indicator. Let's distill this into the 5 steps you can run this weekend.
Step 1. Build the candidate list. WorstEats.com is the fastest. If you want to do it manually, the TripAdvisor slider trick. Rating slider to 1 star, sort by lowest rated. Cross-reference with Google Maps to flag closures.
Step 2. Expect attrition. 30 to 50% of your list is already dead or will be by the time you arrive. Pre-select 3 to 5 candidates and have a backup for your backup.
Step 3. Ask locals with the unruined framing. Where do you eat when you don't want to see a tourist? The old school spots that haven't changed. You'll get directed to the same places without the insult.
Step 4. Order the house specialty and time the service. The house specialty is your diagnostic probe. The service gap is your data point.
Step 5. Cross-reference the live experience against the 1-star reviews. Separate the entertaining bad from the dangerous bad. If the review said rude waiter and the waiter was rude, the system works. If the review said food poisoning, you should have filtered that place out at step 1.
The tool recommendation is Worst Eats for the initial list, the TripAdvisor slider trick for verification, and a notes app for the field observations. Don't rely on memory. The details are what make the story.
The story is the point. You're not doing this to be cruel. You're doing it because the worst-rated circuit is a different way to see a city. It's the negative space of the tourist experience.
One last thought on what this whole exercise says about review culture.
The existence of WorstEats.com tells you something. Someone built a tool specifically to surface what every major platform hides. That's not a feature gap. That's a philosophical disagreement about what reviews are for.
The platforms think reviews are for helping you choose well. The WorstEats creator thinks reviews are for understanding the full landscape, including the failures.
As AI-generated reviews flood these platforms over the next few years, the worst list is going to become even more unreliable. Fake 5-star reviews are already a problem. Fake 1-star reviews from competitors are also a problem. The human fieldwork element, actually going there, eating the house specialty, timing the service, becomes more valuable the more the digital layer is corrupted.
The playbook gets more relevant, not less.
Because you can't fake a bad meal. Well, you can, but you'd have to open a real restaurant and actually serve bad food, and at that point, you're just running a bad restaurant.
Which brings us back to where Daniel started, the Venice place that closed. It was bad enough to earn its 1-star reputation, bad enough to go out of business, and gone before you could experience it. The worst-rated circuit is a race against entropy.
That's what makes it compelling. You're not just eating bad food, you're documenting the end of something. A restaurant in its final form before the market corrects the error.
If you've run your own 1-star circuit, we want to hear about it. What city, what place, what happened when you walked in?
Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We read everyone.
This has been My Weird Prompts with me, Korn.
Me, Herman Poppleberry. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to us.
show my weird prompts where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.